The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone. Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We're loaded with content today. Today's program, I think, is going to be eye-opening, also very educational. I think it's particularly the second segment, I think it'll be great for young people. So if you have some youngsters in the house, it might be a good time to get them to listen in. We'll be talking about America's first president, George Washington, and a little video that Prager University put together a week or two ago on the changing of the name of that university, or just surveying some of the students on campus to see what they think about whether or not we should change the name of the institution. Following that, if we have time, we'll talk some about Thomas Jefferson, also one of the founding fathers of the United States. And in particular, we'll be discussing the Louisiana Purchase. This is the anniversary of that purchase centuries ago. So we'll look back at some of that history as well. But first, I want to remind you of what my father wrote in America Under Attack. And again, this came out in early 2013, so 5 years ago, when my father was talking about Satan targeting the very top tier of America's government. And there's a fair bit in that booklet about the media just swooning over Barack Obama. He could do no wrong. But as my father brings out in that booklet, I mean, when you look at what he was actually doing, the upside-down foreign policy, for example, the animosity that the Obama administration had toward Israel, the abuses of power, and then, of course, as he brings out in another book, Great Again, the lies and the deceit. He says in Great Again, they lied and lied and lied and were caught in their lies. He says that administration covered itself in a cloak of deceit. In some cases, they even joked or bragged about their lies. I mean, they can not only lie and get away with it, they can lie and brag about the lie and brag about the false narrative. I want to take you back to the Arab Spring of 2011, the Muslim Brother Uprising in Egypt in particular. And you'll recall, particularly if you followed thetrumpet.com at the time, you'll recall that the Obama administration was responsible for pushing out Hosni Mubarak, an ally of the United States. They pushed him right out of office. He's an authoritarian. He has to go. And we've got to clear the way for the Muslim Brotherhood. And as soon as they did that, then, of course, all the Obama people came forward and said, hey, the Muslim Brotherhood, they're great. They're peaceful. In the case of James Clapper, the director of national intelligence, he said that the Muslim Brotherhood was a secular organization. This is from a congressional hearing in February of 2011. Clip one.
The term Muslim Brotherhood is an umbrella term for a variety of movements. Right. In the case of Egypt, a very heterogeneous group, largely secular, which has eschewed violence and has decried Al-Qaeda as a perversion of Islam.
Right.
They have pursued social ends, betterment of the political order in Egypt.
They've just made everything better in Egypt. Social, political, they've eschewed violence. The Muslim Brotherhood, they're not violent at all. They've eschewed that, and of course, they're largely secular. The Muslim Brotherhood, a religion! He said it was largely secular. Well, his office had to later release a statement clarifying his remarks, saying that the Brotherhood worked through a political system that's largely secular. That's what he meant. He's aware, he said later, he's aware of the fact that the Brotherhood is a religion. But what an embarrassment. And of course, in so many ways, the Obama administration got it all wrong during that Arab Spring. Whether you look at Egypt or Libya or wherever. Other examples, going back to that great again quote, lies, lies, lies. It was in 2013 when documents were leaked by the former NSA contract worker, a man by the name of Edward Snowden. You'll remember this, June, July, I think it was, 2013. And basically the documents that he released showed that the NSA had been collecting metadata from phone records on millions and millions of Americans. The documents also indicated that they were able to surveil Americans' internet activities. Pretty frightening stuff. That was in the summer of 2013. And great again, my father quotes from this former NSA official. He worked on the job with them for 32 years. And he was asked, well, where's this headed? I mean, given what they're stockpiling in Utah and other places and what the Snowden papers reveal, where is this headed? This retired official, William Benny, he said it's really a turnkey situation where it can be turned quickly and become a totalitarian state pretty quickly. The capacity to do that is being set up. That's a chilling statement. This is my father responding to the guy's quote. My father says, that's a chilling statement. It gets to the heart of the issue. Look at the potential power the government already has. I mean, this was in 2013. My father writing in Great Again, in America Under Attack. Look at the power they're amassing. And look at what they're doing with it. And look at how they can abuse it. Well, you go back a few months before these Snowden papers were released. This is a Senate Intelligence Committee from March of 2013. And here is what, here again, the Director of National Intelligence, James Clapper, this is what he said under oath before Congress, clip two.
Does the NSA collect any type of data at all on millions or hundreds of millions of Americans?
No, sir.
It does not.
Not wittingly.
That's from March of 2013. He's being questioned there by Congressman or Senator Wyden. I forget which state he comes from. Does the NSA collect any type of data on millions of Americans? And Clapper said no. And then added, not wittingly. And just 3 months after he made that statement, here comes all the Snowden documents. Proving that Clapper had lied under oath. He perjured himself. And then when he came out to correct the record later on national television, this was during a TV interview, here's how he explained his lie. This is clip three.
I have great respect for Senator Wyden. I thought, though, in retrospect, I was asked, when are you going to stop beating your wife kind of question, which is meaning not... answerable necessarily by a simple yes or no. So I responded in what I thought was the most truthful or least untruthful manner by saying no.
That's the director of intelligence admitting that he lied and saying that, well, really it was Senator Wyden's problem. He kind of threw a gotcha question at me and it wasn't really answerable. And so I responded with what I thought was the least untruthful, the least untruthful. And then they complained, Clapper's people, that, well, it was spur of the moment. Well, you just heard it there. It was a gotcha question. And Wyden came out his office later and said that he gave the question to Clapper a day before the hearing. And then after the testimony, you can see in the exchange there that Wyden's a little bit skeptical. You're saying no? You're not gathering any type of data on Americans? They offered James Clapper, after the fact, an opportunity to amend his testimony in writing, and he didn't do it. He maintained his lie, even when asked after the fact. He stood by his word until the documents were leaked. Snowden, who's from the NSA, an insider, he reveals the documents. And then Clapper comes out and says, well, I guess I can clarify a few things. I gave what was, what I thought, the least untruthful answer last week on Friday. The House Intel Committee released its 253-page report saying that there was no collusion between Russia and the Trump campaign in 2016. No collusion. And yet the Robert Mueller investigation, the witch hunt, the hoax, it continues on. There's no sign of it coming anywhere near the conclusion. But it's interesting, according to this House Intel report from Friday, there's a bit in there, again, on James Clapper as being the one who leaked the information about the Steele dossier to the press right after James Comey briefed President-elect, then President-elect, in January of 2017. That was the, what was it, the January 5th or 6th meeting. Comey got together with him, the President-elect, and said, hey, you know, we've got all of this salacious intelligence. It's unverified. I mean, we can't verify it, but just so you know, this is what's been said. And some of the media, they have this information as well. So he gives the briefing, and then after the briefing, it's James Clapper who leaks the information, according to this congressional report released just Friday, just last week. Clapper goes to CNN and says, hey, you might want to know that Comey had this meeting with President Trump, and here's what they talked about. Now, here again, what's amazing, or appalling, I guess, is that in July of last year, this would have been 6 months after Clapper leaked, after he leaked the information to CNN, he was asked in yet another congressional hearing, did you discuss the dossier or any other intelligence related to Russia hacking of the 2016 election with journalists? And Clapper's response was, no. No, I didn't. I'm not a leaker. I didn't leak it. I didn't discuss it with the media. This is from that congressional report on Friday, released by, again, the House Intel Committee. It says, when initially asked about leaks related to the dossier in July 2017, former DNI Clapper flatly denied discussing the dossier or any other intelligence related to Russia hacking in the 2016 election with journalists. Clapper subsequently acknowledged discussing the dossier with CNN journalist Jake Tapper and admitted that he might have spoken with other journalists. So not just one, but others as well. Several journalists, Jake Tapper, most notable among them. It says, Clapper's discussion with Tapper took place in early January 2017, around the time the IC leaders briefed President Obama and then President-elect Trump on the Christopher Steele information. So they briefed President-elect Trump in early January 2017 about all of this salacious gossip, unverified. And the reason this detail covered in the House Intel Committee report from Friday is so important is because of what James Comey said about the briefing and has since been saying about who directed him to have this briefing with the president-elect. Comey, you'll recall, we've covered this in recent weeks, he had these discussions with President Trump or President-elect Trump. He went back then and wrote these memos to himself, and then those memos are what he leaked later to a friend, in the hopes that it would produce this special counsel or this investigation. And this is from his memos. He said, I said I wasn't saying this was true. He's talking to this is his recollection of the meetings or the briefing with President-elect Trump about the dossier, the Christopher Steele document, all of this salacious gossip. And according to his memos, he said he told President-elect Trump that he wasn't saying that it was true. He just wanted him to know that it had been reported or that there were reports out there. Comey wrote, I said media like CNN had them and they were looking for news hooks. I said it was important that we not give them the excuse to write that the FBI has the material and that we were keeping it. He said he couldn't believe they hadn't gone with it. I said it was inflammatory stuff that they would get killed for reporting straight up from the source reports. So in other words, Comey told the president-elect, look, they're not going to report it as is because it is just salacious gossip and it's unverified. And they'd get killed for reporting something like that. They need a news hook. They need a reason, in other words. They need something to justify going ahead with the reporting. Now, James Comey, as you know, he's been on his endless book tour over the last several weeks. Last week, Thursday night, he was interviewed by Brett Baer, who, quite unlike George Stephanopoulos, asked some questions, some pointed questions about what was happening in those critical transition months there at the end of 2016 and the beginning of 2017. Here's a bit from that interview last week, clip four.
Speaking of CNN, you write in the memos of that meeting, you write, I said to President-elect Trump, media like CNN had the dossier and were looking for a news hook. I said it was inflammatory stuff. So the story of that briefing leaks out almost immediately after you do it. CNN and others run the story of this unverified dossier. Did you or your subordinates leak that?
No.
So Comey says, well, we didn't leak it. The FBI didn't leak it. I told him about all the salacious gossip. And then right after, just 3-4 days after that meeting between Comey and President-elect Trump, CNN goes with the story. Well, hey, there was a briefing and they discussed this salacious content. That was Brett Baer there asking him, well, did you leak the information? And then he continues on here, clip five.
Did James Clapper?
No, not to my knowledge. No.
A little bit of a, not quite as emphatic. No, not to my knowledge. Very lawyerly. And then further, clip six.
John Brennan?
I don't know who leaked it. I had no part in any leaking of it. It was about 4 or 5 days later that it leaked. But I remember because President-elect called me about it.
Did you ever try to find out?
Who leaked an unclassified public document? No.
There's James Comey talking about the document saying that, well, look, what? It's not that big of a deal. Who leaked an unclassified public document? What's wrong with this? He remember, as a leaker. He leaks memos that, well, it's public anyway. They were my memos. I did it on my time. I kept a record, kind of like I keep a diary. And so if I want to come out and release the contents of these confidential documents or these confidential discussions, I can go ahead and do it. Well, did you leak this? No, I didn't do it. James Clapper? Not to my knowledge. What about Brennan? Who leaked an unclassified public document? And so we're left with that. We're left with that following the interview last week that Comey had with Brett Baer. But then he goes on, Brett Baer does, and asks him about, okay, so you're having this briefing with President-elect. You tell him about all of this salacious gossip, all of this horrible stuff, all this dirt dug up about President Trump or President-elect Trump. Did you give him some of the background behind this dossier? Here's how that exchange went, clip seven.
Did you inform the President-elect at the time what you knew about how it was funded or who was behind it?
No, I did not.
Did you inform him that Christopher Steele had been fired by the FBI?
No.
Or that he had lied?
No, and I didn't know those things at that time anyway.
Or that it had been used, at least in part, to get this FISA application to spy on somebody in his campaign.
No, didn't come up.
No, none of that came up. Just the salacious gossip of the dossier itself. He didn't talk about Christopher Steele. He didn't tell the president-elect that Steele had been fired or that Steele had lied to the FBI. He didn't say that the Democrats funded the dossier. He didn't say that it was the Hillary campaign itself that funded it. And he didn't say that he used the dossier as justification to apply for the FISA warrant to spy on Carter Page. None of that was brought up. The only things that were brought up, hey, there's some real dirt out there about you, just so that you know. And now for this little tidbit that he let out in the discussion last week with Brett Baer. Here's clip 8.
And who suggested you brief that?
I think the Director of National Intelligence did.
And that would be James Clapper. Who was it that directed Comey to brief the president about the salacious gossip? That would be James Clapper. Hot Air put together the chronology. And just listen to the picture that this paints. Here is the step-by-step chronology. The news outlets had the salacious dirt. They had the gossip. They had all the news about the prostitutes and such that Christopher Steele had dug up from Russian sources. And they were looking for an excuse to run with it. They had had it for months. They had it before the election. They were looking for a news hook, something that would allow for them to go forward with the story. CNN, of course, broke it after, just as Comey said, a few days after the briefing. And then I think it was the very next day when BuzzFeed just printed the entirety of the dossier. So it's all out there in mid-January, right as President Trump's about to be inaugurated. So there were the news outlets looking for the hook. And then, like you just heard there in that last clip, Clapper tells Comey, now you go and brief President-elect Trump about the dossier. You got to tell the president-elect that CNN and these other groups have this salacious material. They just haven't run with it yet. So Comey then briefs Trump on all those salacious details. He doesn't, however, tell Trump about who funded it. He doesn't tell him anything about Christopher Steele. He doesn't say that he lied. He doesn't say that Carter Page is being spied on. It didn't come up. None of that came up. And then within days of that briefing in early January 2017, James Clapper, the one who directed Comey to set up the briefing, James Clapper, we now know, he picks up the phone and calls Jake Tapper at CNN saying that Trump had been briefed on the dossier. CNN then uses that as the news hook, publishes the story about the briefing and the dossier. BuzzFeed dumps it all into the media cycle. Clapper, of course, denies the leak early on. And then, as we learned Friday from the intelligence, the report released by the House Intel Committee, Clapper has now fessed up to the leak. And he's, of course, retired now. And would you believe where he got his next gig in August of 2017? He was hired by CNN as an intelligence analyst for CNN, the same network that Jake Tapper's at. Now, think about Jake Tapper for a moment. I mean, we've had some clips from his programs over the years here, but he knows who the leakers are, at least in the case of Clapper. He knows that when Clapper comes out and says, I didn't leak it, he knows he's lying. He knows he's lying. I mean, that's just between him. That's just between him and what he knows. But then you put it in front of congressional hearings where under oath you're saying, no, I didn't do that. I didn't do anything like that. They know this is going on. See, they're all in on it. This is the collusion. These are the colluders. They know it's a hoax. They know it's a fraud. And yet they continue going with the same narrative, which is that all of the crooks are on the side with Trump. And all of the angels are on our side trying to bring Trump down. And James Clapper is just one of them. Comey, as I said, he leaked those confidential memos months after Trump was inaugurated. And for what reason? Here's clip 9.
I asked a friend of mine to share the content of the memo with a reporter. Didn't do it myself for a variety of reasons, but I asked him to because I thought that might prompt the appointment of a special counsel.
That's June of 2017. You see, that's okay. That's completely okay. If we can leak these things to prompt a special counsel, if we can leak these things to make CNN and BuzzFeed run with the dossier, that's fine. There's no crimes here anywhere, mind you. No crimes. Just gossip, rumors, leaking, lying. And these are individuals right at the very top of what was the Obama government, the Obama presidency, the Obama Director of National Intelligence. They lied and lied and lied, and they were caught in their lies, my father wrote. That administration covered itself in a cloak of deceit. In some cases, they even joked or bragged about their lies. See, CNN's in on it. CNN's part of the cloak. CNN's giving them cover. You contrast it, as I say, with the other side. It's frightening, the picture that this paints. That same congressional report from Friday, it had this little tidbit in there on Mike Flynn. He's the one that lasted for a month in the Trump administration. He was the national security advisor. And according to this House Intel Committee report from Friday, it says the FBI did not detect any deception in Flynn's interview. That's in January of 2017. So this is before Mueller comes along. This is when Comey's heading up the FBI. And so Comey's people are interviewing Mike Flynn, and he's telling them, this is what I said to the Russian ambassador, and they didn't detect any kind of deception on the part of Flynn. But he was, according to Trump and according to Vice President Pence, he wasn't completely forthright in what he had or hadn't said to the Russian ambassador. So if you remember, back in February of 2017, the Trump administration fired Mike Flynn. But that's not enough for not being completely forthright. Mueller comes along in May of last year, and then he goes after. He makes Mike Flynn the center of the investigation, at least early on. Because when sifting back through the documents, the interviews with FBI officials, he found an apparent contradiction. The Daily Mail, over the weekend, it summarizes the case this way. It says, in December 2017, Flynn agreed to plead guilty on making false statements to the FBI regarding the December 2016 conversation with Russian Ambassador Sergei Kislyak. Flynn's son was spared prosecution as a result of the plea deal. So here comes the Mueller investigation. They're basically saying to Flynn, if you don't plead guilty, we're going after your son. And it all revolved around, if you remember there, at the last part of 2016, these UN resolutions coming forward to condemn the building of Israeli settlements. And Flynn evidently had a discussion with Kislyak saying, look, can you delay this or at least vote against it? And Kislyak evidently said that Russia's not going to comply with his request. This is during the transition team period. The Daily Mail says Flynn's plea agreement states that he had falsely told the FBI that he had merely asked Kislyak how Russia planned to vote on the UN resolution condemning Israel's settlements. So that's where the contradiction occurs. Did he ask the Russian president how they were going to, or the Russian ambassador how they were going to vote, or did he say you need to vote no? Well, it says here in the Intel report from Friday, the implication of the Intel committee's finding is that the FBI did not initially believe Flynn had intentionally lied, but that Mueller used unintentional contradictions in his interview to force a plea. So it was a mistake. At least that's the implication from Friday's report, an unintentional contradiction. It wasn't enough for Mueller that Flynn was fired in February of last year. He needs to be prosecuted. We need an indictment. He lied. He lied under oath. And then he agreed to plead guilty so long as the FBI wouldn't go after his son. There was a piece in the American Spectator last week. You may have seen the news of Ronnie Jackson, the personal physician or doctor for President Trump, Most people, as this article brings out, they never heard of him before news broke of Trump's first physical, I guess it was. Now the whole world knows about him, or certainly the world of America. Few heard of Admiral Jackson until he shared the results of President Trump's first physical in office. Jackson didn't just appear on the Washington scene when Trump did, though. He was President Obama's doctor for almost 3.5 years. This was President Obama's doctor. No one was interested in Jackson for several years, but now that Trump wants him to have a higher profile job in a higher profile job, the journalism knives are out, and wrecking him has become the media priority. Yes, he's been wrecked. He withdrew his name. As soon as Trump put him up there to head up, the VA committee or VA office, I believe, then that's when the media knives came out. Wait a second, something's wrong with him. Nothing was wrong with him during the 3.5 years. He was the personal doctor for Barack Obama. But now, because Trump wants to promote him, you see there's something terribly wrong with him. It says, the as-yet unsubstantiated claims are numerous. He allegedly overprescribed painkillers. He allegedly wrecked a car while drunk. He allegedly is the worst person ever to work with. The allegations are so damning and overwhelming that even a casual observer could be prompted to ask, why now? Why are all these allegations coming forward now? Admiral Jackson has been a high-ranking naval officer and physician for quite a number of years. Surely some of this should have come to light before now. Maybe, say, when he was named the personal physician to the most powerful man on earth and given a full-time office in the White House? Where were these media members vetting Ronnie Jackson when he was working inside of the White House for the last 3.5 years of Barack Obama's administration? Well, the American Spectator says here, whether true or untrue, it seems pretty clear that we wouldn't know about any of this unless Jackson were about to become a member of President Trump's cabinet. The clear signal from the Democrats and the mainstream media is that they are willing to destroy anyone who dares accept a job offer from this president. That's what we see happening. An unintentional contradiction. Mike Flynn is fired and his life is destroyed. He's up for promotion, Ronnie Jackson, even after working for 3.5 years with Obama. And his life is destroyed. His reputation is destroyed. Which side is actually coming under a vicious and slanderous attack? Which side is aggressively attacking America? America under attack. Which side is it that's undermining the law of the land, that's bypassing congressional authority when necessary, and that's now constantly attacking the President of the United States? Which side is it that typically recuses itself when there's any hint of a conflict of interest? And which side is it that just routinely weaponized all the intelligence agencies, the NSA, the FBI, the DOJ, the CIA? Which side is it that rushes to defend the enemies of America? Right at the outset of the Arab Spring, they're not radical. They're not even religious. They've eschewed violence. Who are the real villains here in all of this history, this recent history? Who are the real victims? Which side cannot get away with even the slightest contradictory statement? Not that that's justified. I'm not sticking up for a little lie as compared to a big one. But which side lies with impunity? Or as my father wrote in Great Again, they lie and lie and lie, and then they get caught in lies. And that doesn't stop them. They go right on lying, even bragging and joking about it. Where is the actual collusion? Who's conspiring against whom? And lastly, which side, no matter how corrupt and deceitful they are in covering up that deceit, which side is never fired, never indicted, never prosecuted, and even after finally retiring, after a legacy of lies and leaks, perjury even, goes on to be hired by CNN? You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Freedom is one of the most sought-after ideals in human history. Man's search for freedom has taken him into the fiercest of protests, struggles, revolutions, civil wars, and even world wars. Today, in the midst of free societies, many continue to fight for what they perceive as ever greater freedoms. And yet, many of these same people are actively fighting against law. Few people understand that this war against law actually undermines true freedom. To learn more, request Gerald Fleury's booklet, No Freedom Without Law. In this free booklet, you will see what the Bible says about the latter-day spirit of rebellion and lawlessness that is now so common in our nations today. Also request America Under Attack. In this booklet, you will learn more about the spirit behind this attack on law. You'll see where this is leading. Both booklets are offered freely at no cost or obligation to you. Request No Freedom Without Law and America Under Attack. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily Radio Show airs every morning at 7 a.m. Central Time on KPCG 101.3 FM in Edmond, Oklahoma.
Well, I can see from the clock now I'm probably not going to get to the Louisiana purchase material, which is too bad. We'll have to push that back to tomorrow, I guess. But another important anniversary for today. It was on this day in 1789 that George Washington was inaugurated as the first president of the United States of America. George Washington, in so many ways, was the founding father of the United States. He was a national hero, a war veteran, a victorious general. He sacrificed everything he had for his country. He was unanimously chosen to preside over the Constitutional Convention. He was the first to sign the U.S. Constitution. He was the only president to lead an army into battle as commander-in-chief. He was the only person to be unanimously elected president, and he did it twice. And he was also a slave owner. And for the radical left, for the enemies of America, that last fact is all that matters. I mean, even for an overwhelming majority of college students at George Washington University, Prager University, as I said at the top of the show, they had a video back on April 22nd. This guy basically went through the campus looking for students and asked them, given the climate that we're in today in America, is it time for George Washington University to change its name? Here's a sampling, clip 10.
Do you think we should consider changing the name of the university? I think it's definitely worth making, like, having a discussion about it.
Gosh, that's really a hard question. There's so much that goes into the name of an institution. I don't think I can answer that, but I'd say I'd like to hear more opinions.
Personally, I would change the name.
I think that it should be changed. I think that recognition is super important, and I think that...
Recognition
for who he was as a person.
I don't agree with slave trade, so yeah.
Would you change the name, if you could do it?
Yeah, sure.
That was 1776, it's 2018, and I think it's important that we realize and reupholster the systems that built us.
Sure, I think we should change the name. I would probably change the name, but I would do so universally. Like, if I were to change the name of GW, then I would advocate that things named after slave holders in general should be changed.
We've sort of retrospectively mythologized this concept of liberty and freedom.
What's the first thing that comes to mind when I say George Washington?
Oh, I think about him owning slaves, yeah.
That's the first thing that comes to mind. Now, you could say, well, they selectively edited that, this conservative group. But according to this video, after 3 hours of talking to students all over campus, this institution or this group, Prager University, found that 70% of the students thought the name should be changed. 70% of the students, not at the University of Missouri or UCLA, 70% of the students at George Washington University, they think that the name should be changed. This is George Washington that we're talking about. When a university student today hears the word George Washington, they don't immediately think founding father. They don't immediately think national hero. They don't immediately think sacrifice. They don't think Constitution. They don't think Commander-in-Chief. They think slave owner. David McCullough's book, 1776, he wrote that without Washington's leadership and unrelenting perseverance, the Revolution almost certainly would have failed. In other words, were it not for General George Washington, there would be no United States of America. There wouldn't be any George Washington University. It's pretty amazing, the ignorance. But this is now common in America today, in the America of 2018. You can look, by the way, at the MountVernon.org website, George Washington's estate there. It's a beautiful estate to visit, by the way, if you've never seen it. But it points out even on that website 10 things that you ought to know about George Washington. The fact that his attitudes towards slavery changed even during his own lifetime. He freed the 123 slaves he was responsible for. He freed them at the end of his life. He wrote in 1786, "I never mean, unless some particular circumstance should compel me to possess another slave by purchase, it being among my first wishes to see some plan adopted by which slavery in this country may be abolished by law." And really, the Constitution was set up with that in mind. You would think people, at least at George Washington University, would be taught that. But no, the first thing they think of is what you just heard there in that video. George Washington University was founded in 1821, so we're coming up on the 200-year anniversary. And according to their own website, the university's goal is to fulfill the vision of our first president and now namesake's vision that our nation's capital be an educational center to prepare leaders. I mean, that was clearly written at a time. Who knows how much time has elapsed since it was written. But it was written at a time when America took pride in the legacy of its preeminent founder. In 2018, however, we want to wipe out that history. We want to erase it. And that's why you see campaigns all over the United States to pull down statues, to stamp out that history. You look at the big controversy last summer in Charlottesville. Demonstrators for and against removing the Confederate statues. And then the way the media approached that story, just appalling. Here again. There were white supremacists on one side and peace-loving, innocent protesters on the other side. That's the way it was reported. Never mind Antifa. Never mind that they showed up wearing masks and with clubs. Never mind that they were starting fights. It was, as the president himself said at the time, there were violent thugs on both sides. You remember how much heat President Trump took for that? It was probably his most contentious, press conference, and he's had a number of them just in a little over a year. Here's a reminder of what took place on August 15th, 2017, clip 11.
I'm not putting anybody on a moral plane. What I'm saying is this. You had a group on one side and you had a group on the other, and they came at each other with clubs, and it was vicious, and it was horrible, and it was a horrible thing to watch. But there is another side. There was a group on this side, you can call them the left, you've just called them the left, that came violently attacking the other group. So you can say what you want, but that's the way it is.
And they did say what they wanted, the press. And they didn't agree. Because in their minds, the left is never violent. Or if they are, it's justified. Here's the president they hate, keep in mind, pointing out the obvious. Because the media won't do it. He said further, clip 12.
I think there's blame on both sides, and I have no doubt about it, and you don't have any doubt about it either.
See, the way he approached that, you can see why there's so much hatred, so much animosity. They've gone to war against the Trump administration. But notice in that same press conference what he had to say. The protest there in Charlottesville, remember, was over Robert E. Lee, the statue there. And here's what he, again, had to say in the exchange with the press, clip 13.
So, this week it's Robert E. Lee. I noticed that Stonewall Jackson's coming down. I wonder, is it George Washington next week? And is it Thomas Jefferson the week after? You know, you really do have to ask yourself, where does it stop? But they were there to protest. Excuse me. You take a look the night before. They were there to protest the taking down of the statue of Robert E. Lee.
That's where the press started to really react with some kind of rage. Where does this stop? And then one reporter speaks up and says, are you putting what you call the alt-left and white supremacists on the same moral plane? Here's one final excerpt from that conference, clip 14.
You had people in that group that were there to protest the taking down of, to them, a very, very important statue and the renaming of a park from Robert E. Lee to another name.
No,
George Washington was a slave owner. Was George Washington a slave owner? So will George Washington now lose his status? Are we going to take down statues to George Washington? How about Thomas Jefferson? What do you think of Thomas Jefferson? You like him? Okay, good. Are we going to take down the statue? Because he was a major slave owner. Now, are we going to take down his statue? So you know what? It's fine. You're changing history. You're changing culture. And you had people, and I'm not talking about the neo-Nazis and the white nationalists, because they should be condemned totally. But you had many people in that group other than neo-Nazis and white nationalists, okay? And the press has treated them absolutely unfairly.
He saw where this was going. He was right. He was right. You heard the reporters. George Washington and Robert E. Lee, they're not the same. Well, look at what's happened since. That was just August of last year. Look at all, I mean, the articles then that came out, all of these self-righteous pieces. Well, President Trump to equate George Washington with Robert E. Lee, that's absurd. No one's doing that. But we've got to bring down the statue of Robert E. Lee. He was with the Confederacy. He was fighting to keep slavery alive. This is from the Washington Post. No, Mr. President, Washington and Jefferson are not the same as Confederate generals. I don't have time to read all of this, but here is this commentary. Here is this commentary just ridiculing the President of the United States, bringing forward all of these historians. These historians that were pointing out there's a difference. Now, come on. And for the president to say there really isn't much difference between this statue or that statue, it kind of highlights how ignorant he is. That's the takeaway here. Trump has said, this is the Washington Post, Trump has said that he's a fan of history, yet he does not seem to trust historians. Okay. Douglas Blackman, an author and senior fellow at the University of Virginia's Miller Center, said Trump either does not understand the history of the Confederacy or he's sympathetic to white nationalist views. That was the media's big takeaway from that conference and from what happened in Charlottesville. Well, see, he's siding with the white nationalists. You heard the clips I just played for you. He said they ought to be condemned. But let's not, in condemning them, let's not ignore what was going on the other side. And furthermore, where does this end? Listen, you can change the history. You can change our culture. But you can't just sit here and lie about all this. Quoting this guy, Douglas Blackman, it says, it's the difference between a monument to the founder of our nation and a monument to a key figure in an effort to break apart the nation. This is the historian Blackman, following that contentious press conference, pointing out how ignorant President Trump must surely be. It says, finally, to suggest that association with slavery is the only criteria on whether a historical figure should be honored is an equally faulty argument. That was the Washington Post on August 16th, 2017. And what you just heard in the PragerU video, what you just heard it for yourself, 70%. You heard students suggesting that the association with slavery is the only criteria on whether a historical figure should be honored. Now, in August, following that press conference, they said that was a faulty argument, the Washington Post. Are they going to come forward now in response to the PragerU video and all of these 70% of the students at George Washington University and talk about how ignorant these students are? I don't think they're going to be coming out with a story like that anytime soon. But look at the direction. There was President Trump, for as much as they hate him. He pointed out the obvious. Okay, it's Robert E. Lee. Then it's Stonewall Jackson. Then where do we go? In California recently, it was President McKinley because he offends Indians. So where do we go next? Well, go to George Washington University campus and ask the students, hey, should we change the name now? I think we need to consider it. What about Washington, D.C.? Should we change that name? I think we should look into it. I'm open for opinions. This is astounding. The ignorance. And then the adults, deferring to the youths. And the only one they're going to attack is President Trump. The Federalist had a list the other day. Actually, it was months ago. Even defending Trump back in August, pointing out these comments from high-profile commentators on the left, of course, wanting to get rid of the Jefferson Memorial, Mount Rushmore. And now, as Prager University revealed a couple weeks ago, here are students at the very campus named after our country's founding father. You would think, I mean, if anyone is untouchable, it would be George Washington. But they're all targets, you see. At least the ones that own slaves. They're all targets. It shows just how truly ignorant Americans are regarding America's noble history. Here again, look at the history. of our nation, of this founding father, this man who was devoted to the sacred fire of liberty, who realized that the destiny of the Republican model of government was staked on this experiment entrusted to the hands of Americans, the American people. That's the way he put it in his inaugural address. He realized that what he was doing as the pioneer leader, he realized it would resound for generations. At least he thought it would continue. He knew that he was setting precedent for the nation itself. Well, today, a lot of our young people, they want to erase that precedent and start with something new and different, and start with something that conforms to the thinking of today. They don't see him as an indispensable man, as one historian put it. All that they see when they look at George Washington is slavery. Well, all of them except for a few. Here's one bit from the last part of that video, clip 15.
Do you think it's time to change the name of this university?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. This is one of our founding fathers. If we forget liberty, if we forget the intrinsic nature behind the founder's philosophy of liberty, then what exactly do we have?
That's from PragerU a couple weeks back. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We're out of time, so we're going to have to leave it there. Thanks for joining us today, and we'll see you again tomorrow.